Please welcome singer and songwriter Balab Sarkar now, who joins me. Welcome to the programme. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Kassar. It's great to be here. Really, really interesting debate this will be.
So, yeah, I asked a question to the listeners and I would like them to get involved. This 81869, what kind of music did you grow up listening to? I'm going to ask you as well. Was it indie music? Was it Bhangra?
Yeah, it was indie music. It actually was quite an eclectic, different types of music. I had an older brother who was into Prince. He was 5 years older than me and he got me into all sorts of music. It was like The Smiths, it was The Cure, it was New Order. This is back in the late 80s, early 90s I'm talking. But I grew up in Peterborough, mm-hmm. which is 80 miles north of London, and it's quite a suburban place. There was only like 7 Bengali. My dad moved there when he was first generation immigrant from Bangladesh, yeah. And he moved to Peterborough because the company offered him a some kind of deposit on his house. So he moved to Peterborough, but there wasn't a big Asian community there at the time. There was like 7 Bengali families, and so really, I my school was predominantly very white, and my influences and the sounds that the friends I used to hang around with was very much indie music. Yeah, it was just the culture.
So that was one of the big influences.
Yeah, definitely. I think just where you grew up and your surroundings and your friends, I think definitely influences you. And also I had an older brother that was really into music, and he just constantly used to play like all this, you know, quite diverse range of music from a very young age.
Like what?
Well, as I said, you know, I was a, you know, young kid listening to Prince at like, you know, 9, 10. It was insane. Like, you know, I remember, you know, The Cure, like, you know, loads of the songs.
So that's the sort of stuff your brother was listening to?
That's what my brother, yeah. Because that's right, he was listening to that as well. Because again, he actually was born in London, but he moved at a very young age to Peterborough as well. So again, his friends at his school, they were the kind of bands that he was listening to as well. So we weren't brought up in a traditional, you know, in a big Asian community like in a Birmingham or a Bradford or in East London. We were in sort of in Peterborough, and yeah. These were the kind of...
Well, Peterborough's got a decent Asian community.
It has got an Asian community, but we were Hindu Bengalis, mm-hmm. and we used to have a little network of Hindu Bengali families that we used to hang around with, and that was basically, and that was just kind of like, you know, birthday parties and things like that.
Yeah.
But outside of that...
Have you read The Namesake?
I haven't, no.
You should.
Oh, okay.
You should. It's about a Hindu Bengali little community. This is a set in New York, but definitely read that.
No, anyway, interesting, yeah.
Aside from that, so you think your location was actually something that informed you, your music style. Is that something that you would say that is shared by a number of other Asians, or were you in the minority?
I think it was timing as well. You've got to remember, I went to a school, and again, I was probably in my year group. I was one of two South Asians in my whole year in that school. Then I went to university in the north, in the York, and this is when Britpop was exploding as well. So timing was really key as well. But this is back then in the day, sort of late 90s, early noughties. And indie music was just big then. You know, this is the Blur.
Did Asian people at the university also enjoy that sort of indie
music?
Yeah,
I think it was so big at the time, actually. Mm-hmm. I think everyone was kind of into it. It was this real push. So when I was sort of forming bands back in the day, that was the big scene at the time. Again, my university, I have to say York, but it was very white back then. And again, there was probably about 2 Asians in my year group even then. So I, you know... All I can say is, like, my anecdotal evidence of my personal journey. I happen to have these sort of, grow up and go to school, university, and this kind of background that kind of influenced my music taste. But I kind of think music is music. If you're into music, and if you're kind of whatever taste or whatever music you like, you can make that kind of music. I'm sure if I had different types of influences, I'd have perhaps gone into that direction as well. But that was the music I loved, you know, it was indie music.
How do you feel about some of the stereotypes that are out there then about Asian people just simply liking Bollywood music or Bhangra?
I don't think it's true anymore, is what I think. So I've got a lot of... So nowadays, everything's changed. The game has changed. This was the early noughties. If you look at the music scene now, there are a lot of... I mean, now it's very international, actually. In fact, some of the best... some great indie bands are coming from Mumbai. And in the UK, you'll get some Bhangra bands. It's completely, everything's flipped a bit, really. But if, you know, if you look at, if you know, when I talk to some of my sort of counterparts, Asian counterparts that are in indie music, you know, they sometimes, you know, they struggle to break through. You know, it can be difficult. Sometimes they'll be playing at an indie festival And, you know, so I know some black punk acts, for example, and they'll be given the urban stage or the, you know, or the, you know, the soul stage, even though it's punk music. So there is a bit of a, there are bands out there, definitely, right now, and there are some great singer-songwriters out
there. But then why aren't they getting their place then? Is it because you don't expect that to be...
I think this is the music industry, actually. I think music's become more about marketing than music now. So if you look at the music industry now, they don't gamble as much. It's very, very... And I've been involved for a long time now, and I tell you, it's very much, they want surefire hits. So there's less money around because of streaming and the internet. I mean, the internet's changed everything. It's changed books, it's changed retail, it's changed, you know, it's changed the way we watch TV, it's changed music radically. So they'd rather take an Instagram model that's got, you know, X number of followers and turn them into a musician rather than take a bet on a really good singer-songwriter who's a different colour skin to what you'd expect to be an indie musician.
Is that what's happened to you? Have you had something like that?
You know, it's been hard to break through. I think you need a bit of luck, to be honest. I mean, you can't deny the fact that South Asians have made it in almost every section of, you know, society, whether it's news, whether it's radio, whether it's TV, you know, film. But why in indie music have there not a really big star that's broken through yet? There's got to be something. I think it's a combination of the music industry taking less bets on singer-songwriters full stop. So it's just harder. But then I think the indie people involved in indie music take probably less of a... Then that's squeezed itself. And then they think... You know, it's about marketing. It's like, if you look like me, if you sound like me, and if you've got hair like me, you know, then people think, oh, I can be that person. So generally, I mean, it's not just an Asian thing. You know, indie music's often been stereotyped as being white and male, actually. So a lot of female bands have struggled as well. That is changing as well. But there is this movement about, like, you know, decolonization of indie music. It's not, you know, I'm not the first person saying this. This is a big thing that's been going for years, I'm sure you know. So,
interesting. So what's the reaction you get now, though, from, say, others who are brown? Say, you say, yeah, I'm into music. Like, oh, cool. You know, what do you do? Bunga? You're like, no, indie. Here's my singer-songwriter set album here.
I think people are just really open to it and really interested. I think the world's just become so global, international. I don't think people are surprised by anything anymore. I think those kind of stereotypes are kind of slightly outdated. I mean, I perform now at sets where I'll have an Afghani singer on before me. I'll have a Lebanese girl on after me. You know, I mean, it's just so international. If you go, you play in London now, it's just insane. What I will say is when I started, you know, in London back in, you know, the noughties, early noughties, you know, just again, for my own anecdotal experience, it is true back then I used to go on these stages, whether the open mic nights or whatever, and there weren't also loads of Asians in indie music on the pub scene, you know. When I used to play in Islington, Camden, you know, all the places, Putney, you know, Walthamstow, different festivals, and it's not like, you know, there was tons of Asian musicians like queuing up to, like, you know, be on the stage. Again, at the time, I didn't think much of it. I just thought, you know, my whole background was growing up in white communities. I thought, I'm on stage, there's a whole lot of white people. This is normal. But I look back now and I think, you know, what was going on there? Why were there only few of us back then? What was going on?
Indeed, that is the case. We had a message here from Simran saying, R&B, hip-hop and rap up to the age of 26 as I grew up in a white town. So back up your point there. But now mainly Bhangra, Kishore, Kumar, Lata, King Rahat, classical and Punjabi. Kirtan, that's from Simran there. Thank you very much for those comments. Let's talk a little bit about the actual event then that we were talking about at the start, the Global Teacher Prize concert. How did you get involved with that? There's a pretty big number of names, like Little Mix, Rita Ora, Liam Payne.
Right. Luck, really. No, I mean, I just sort of believe in life, you know. Luck is really, you prepare your whole life, you work hard, you do the hard work, you do the pubs, you do the clubs, and when something comes along, you're ready for it. You know, you've got to take it when it comes. And actually, it was sort of a mix of a business which I run as well, which is in communications, and I do a little bit of work for a charity, and that charity is involved with this concert. They heard about my music, different people have seen my gigs at the charity, and eventually it went to the top guy, this philanthropist that runs this concert. He seemed to like my music, and he gave me a shot. And then eventually I ended up opening in it. But you have to be ready to take the chance then, you know, prove that you're capable of doing it. And then they give you the shot, you know. So
indeed. Why don't we hear a little bit of your music, if that's okay? Should we do that now?
Yeah, I'd love to. Great.
And because, you know, we've talked a lot about your influences, talked a lot about you growing up. Let's listen to your music a bit and then we'll have a little chat about it afterwards. So please introduce this track and away you go.
Thanks, Kassar. So this is called Hideaway from a new album which I'm writing at the moment. My debut album as a solo artist was Grey Day, but this is a new track from the forthcoming album. So it's Hideaway.
I've seen many angels fall through the night into day. If I was to take your hand, we could slip away. I'm no stranger to the truth, baby, I have paid. I don't wanna dream anymore, I just can't delay. There's a monster in the dark waiting to appear. But if I close my eyes real tight, it will disappear. And love is such a mystery, I am flying blind. Looking out across the sea, waiting for the tide.
For that, I feel like I need to lie down now. You put me in a very relaxed sort of atmosphere. Thank you very much, Palab Sarkar there. And what's that about then, that one?
Still trying to work it out. I think the thing with music is, I mean, it's about love and making connection with someone, really. I think the thing with music is when you write a song, you don't sit down and go, oh, I'm going to write a song now. You know, it just, I think it just sort of comes to you. You just sort of, you could be having breakfast or something, oh, I've got something in my brain, or you're just playing with your guitar and something just comes out. You don't have control over it, and you don't... I think a lot of musicians will say this. You're kind of compelled to do it. You don't have a choice if you're a musician.
Indeed.
It's kind of in you. You've got to get it out, basically.
Indeed. Well, thank you so much. It's been lovely having you here. Best of luck, and hope to have you here again in the future. Just going to finish with a couple of messages on this. Nat in Birmingham says, I've never seen an Asian bass guitar player. Maybe I don't get out much. And also had another message here as well. It's a WhatsApp from Aaron saying, Kassar, I'm 31 years old now, but growing up with my dad and uncles, listen to Gutsals and Qualis. I love Gutsals, and since I've been 16 and my cousins and sisters to tell me I should listen to music of my own age, but that I listen to old people's music, but the poetry in it is amazing. Thank you very much to Aaron for that message as well, and thank you so much to my guest here, Palab Sarkar, who opened at the Global Teacher Prize concert in Dubai, where Little Mix and Rita Ora also performed. It's 22 minutes past 12 here. I'm going to read a couple more messages out. This is about what we were talking about in the first hour, actually, of the programme, which was when we were talking about body hair. And the reason why we were talking about body hair is because there was an illustrator from Pakistan posted pictures of her body hair on Instagram to highlight the pressures on women and also just to you know, challenge some of those taboos out there. Well, we're going to be chatting to her right now, in fact, and read a few more of your messages out, including this one, which was from Kuli, saying, I used to do a full bikini and have always maintained a very relaxed body image with my 7-year-old daughter. She sees my body as it is, but I realise that if she doesn't see my lady hair, she might see it as abnormal. So I've stopped doing a full one and just stay tidy. She has asked where the hair comes from. Bless her. Thank you very much for that. Another message as well saying, When you're married for X number of years, hair is a minor issue. I get my husband to wax under my arms, no biggie, each their own. Remove it, don't remove it, whatever suits. It's 23 minutes past 12 here on The Big Debate. We're going to carry on talking a little bit about body hair now. The question, if you remember in the first hour, was if you remove your body hair, do you do it for yourself or your partner? And the reason why we did all of that in the first hour was because of my next guest, Bae Misal, who's from Pakistan and was the person who put these pictures out on Instagram to challenge those taboos. Thank you so much for your time and coming onto the program. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. This has been amazing. I've been listening in. Oh my God, this is crazy. I can't believe this. Like, wow.
So in your own words, can you tell us why it is then that you put these pictures up? Where did that all start from?
So I think for the longest time, I have PCOS as well. And it's this kind of medical condition that's not really talked about, especially in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. And I realized that every time I stepped out and I had hair on my body, I would just be super conscious. Like, I would just be worried about what people were thinking, you know, like, am I ladylike enough and all of that. And I kind of swore to myself ages ago that I would not listen to society's things about, you know, how one should look like. And I've always also had, like, a bit of a problem with how the media and magazines and models kind of portray people to be, you know. It's not very real. For me, it was honestly just about myself. I don't have a significant other. So it was mostly just being comfortable in myself and going out and really just, you know, not being afraid of what my natural body looks like. That has to do with my, like, me being plus size as well. Like, that was something that I had to really learn to love about myself.
Do you think it's something that women have to put up with a lot more than anybody else, than men, and something that particularly right now as well, these pressures of removing their hair, you know, it's something that's seen as abnormal almost?
I think it's really the idea is about choice, isn't it? Like, what a woman or a man chooses to do with their body or their body hair specifically is really up to them. And when I hear people say, oh, it's for the significant other, I just feel like the significant other should love you for what you really look like then, and shouldn't really, you know, force you to be in a mold. So that was my concern about it. And I do think that women go through this a lot because of what we see in the media, because of what we see, you know, like on TV, on the runway as well.
Let me put something to you then, if you don't mind, because you're talking about that.
Yeah.
We had callers earlier and texters in the first hour of the program. We had one texter, actually, who said he doesn't get intimate with his wife unless she's had a bikini wax. He just doesn't like it.
I actually can't hear you, unfortunately, the connection here is really bad. Could you be just a little louder?
Yes, what we'll do is we'll try to get you back, Bae Misal. So definitely stay there. What we're going to do, though, is read a couple of messages out there because we're getting so many messages on this. Here's another one saying, idiots like that guy that says he won't get intimate with his wife until she's shaven are the reason women have a constant inferiority complex or feel that they have to look a certain way to be attractive to the opposite sex. It's disgraceful. I'm a married man, couldn't care less if my wife had shaved or not. I love my wife in all her beauty. Thank you very much for that message. So, Bae Misal, what I want to ask you is, you know, for that text we had about that man who says he can't get intimate with his wife unless she's had a bikini wax, we also had someone who rejected a rishta because the woman had a moustache. What do you say to that?
Ah, what do you think? I mean, that's really superficial to me. It's really superficial. Although you can't really, because the whole idea of a body image is really important. And, you know, in our very brown culture, we have this wishta tradition where you look at the person and you're like, do I want to get married to this person? That kind of denies, I think, everything that the person is all about. And the first thing that you judge them is based on what they look like. And that's something that I kind of want to get rid of with myself as well. Of course, you can't just say that, oh, looks don't matter. You know what I mean? But to each their own. I think it's, again, all about choice. And to me, I would never really want to be with someone who puts, like, a sort of thing on me, like, oh, if you don't do this, then I won't marry you. You know?
What's been the reaction you've put these photos out in the last month, grown your hair out?
It's been crazy. I think 80% was really good, men and women, surprisingly. I didn't think the men would take it really well in Pakistan, but, you know. But a lot of women had reposted it and started talking about their own, you know, like whatever they've been through. But like the backlash was obviously going to happen anyway. And it's still happening because people then are like, oh, if you've shown this part of your body, then why don't you show other bits of your hair, you know? Mm. And that, I think, just kind of goes back into the forcing a woman to be a certain way. Like, if I choose to not shave my hair today, that doesn't mean I'm not going to shave it tomorrow. It's just the fact is that it's my
just
choice.
You want the choice, isn't it? Right. Thank you
Absolutely. So
much for that, Baymis. It's been lovely chatting to you, and I hope to have you here again on the programme. But that's all we've got time for today on The Big Debate. I will be back tomorrow. Let me finish with a couple of texts that we've had about what we're talking about from 11 o'clock, which is corner shops. One message saying, we still have our shop, but we moved out 10 years ago. My dad wanted us to carry on running it, but me and my brothers didn't want it, so it's on lease instead. And also Jay says, today's debate is going amazing. And I also want to add in as well that we've had a kid 8 years. It was too much. She wanted to end everything. I've had 14 years experience, and now she's doing another job and I'm in the construction business. Thank you so much to all your messages today. Right now, though, it's coming up to 12:30, which means it's time for Asia Network Reports with Priya Rai.